attention to the manager.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Dan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, the confetti's fallen to the ground. Everything domestically has been won now, apart from the whole playoff thing. And now we can set our minds to international football, because we've got the build-up to a major international tournament.
Yep.
The international tournament that starts this Saturday, the OFC Nations Cup. Yes, the Oceania Cup starts this weekend, and I know that I'm really excited, and I know you two guys are really excited about it as well, aren't you?
I am pumped.
Great. I want to see if Tahiti can hold on to their title.
Again.
And I want to see Samoa. I want to see that, because they're actually second in their FIFA rankings compared to all the other teams in there. But last time, they actually let in 24 goals in their three games.
Wow.
But I think they'll do better this time. I'm really, really rooting for Samoa.
I've heard they tighten things up at the back somehow.
Yeah. But I'm pumped. 15 games, one venue. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So Jan, what are you hoping at this tournament?
I'm hoping you're taking some notes here, Jan.
I'm hoping.
Tell us all about it.
And am I picking up that you didn't do any research on this?
I try not to do research. I like to do things off
you
the cuff.
You want to be on the cuff, yeah. Great.
Yeah,
good.
It's on all the edge.
Yeah, because we're going to be talking for half an hour on the Oceania Nations Cup.
Oh, yeah, I can chip in on
starts
that.
Starts off on this Saturday. You know, yeah, I don't think it's being carried on any UK broadcast,
no,
I'm afraid.
No, sadly.
So it's
gone downhill a little bit since Australia left and moved to Asia.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens.
Well, they moved to Europe as well, but that was a different tournament, wasn't it? That was a singing tournament.
Yes, that's true. Maybe, well, I mean, perhaps they'll apply and they'll move to Europe in football as well.
Okay. Well, look, we've actually exhausted all we can talk about on the Oceania Nations Cup.
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week. I'm sure we'll get some more details of it then.
We'll give some updates.
Yeah. So what shall we talk about this week then?
Well, nothing else has happened, has it?
Oh, of course something's happened. Social media was telling us something was going to happen all week.
Yeah.
Proper media was sort of like being a bit sort of, things might happen. This is where Jose Mourinho is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take some pictures of Jose Mourinho going into his house.
Yeah.
And then leaving his house.
Yeah. And then finally, Man United decided to issue a press release, didn't they? Have they actually still done anything there? I mean, I suppose they've officially sacked him, haven't they?
Yeah. But I think they're still in. The last I saw, they were in talks with Mourinho.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what by this point what those talks must be about, because if we understand correctly, they had him lined up anyway. So, but I guess they probably felt that it wasn't ethical to talk to him until they'd sacked Van Gaal, even though a kind of somebody at the club must have leaked out shortly after the cup final that he was being sacked. Which
there are some rumours around that he was given £4 million. Not to join another club while they're dispensed with Van Gaal.
Yeah, I read that also.
Which isn't underhand at all, if it's true.
That's extraordinary. I mean, if it's true, it says an awful lot, I guess, about Manchester United and how they operate. I wonder where Mourinho would have gone if they hadn't have given him that £4 million.
Well, where can he get a gig nowadays?
Well, he might have gone to Newcastle instead of Benitez. That could have happened.
Could have happened.
Yeah.
Could have happened. It wouldn't have happened, but it could have happened.
Mm.
Yeah,
could
I mean, happen. I suppose so. If you look at his career path, then yeah, it sort of goes that way. You know, win the European Cup, managing Real Madrid. Yeah, I suppose there are lots of parallels you can have. I'm sure they're best of mates as well. So
well known. Yeah, actually, the truth of the matter is that Mourinho and Benitez are extremely tight.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is just, it's like WWE. I mean, they actually love each other. They're members of the same drinking club.
Do you think?
Yeah. They meet up in the drones every Saturday night. Have a good old laugh. Everyone
six
else
pints of
expense.
Snake bite and black.
Yeah, you know it. Yeah.
Yeah. They talk English to each other.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
In the perfect accents.
Yes. Of course.
Well, I mean, the drones stands for nothing less.
Yes.
Interesting about it leaking out. I'm sure Moyes wasn't sacked in an altogether perfect fashion. I'm sure that leaked out.
Well, you know what? When Ferguson left, I think that was leaked out a bit earlier as well.
It was about 5 or 6 years before, wasn't it? It was,
actually. There's some leak they got there at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Yeah, they got to check their seals there.
They certainly do have to check their seals. Guys, check your seals. Yeah. I mean, that's advice to anybody. Check your seals, listeners.
Exactly.
At least right once now. A month.
Right now, while you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, don't worry, it's fine. You'll be missing nothing while we're talking. You just go ahead and...
You can do it and still listen to us at the same time.
Of course.
Just throw them some fish.
So
I really knew that was coming.
You knew that, see, that's why I lifted it up. That's sea lion. Oh my God, I can't believe you've done a sea lion instead of doing a seal.
I feel like such an idiot.
No doubt. More research is needed.
I get my sea lion facts right next time.
Listeners should be aware that Jan usually brings long paper with him as research, because he does research.
He's got a whole sheet of A4.
He's got an A4 sheet. It's usually A5 or something.
It's a little one of those shopping list formats. I don't know what the official SI number is.
It's like the back of a receipt, only it's not the back of a receipt, because the back of a receipt's got crap on it. But it's a bit like that. But this is... an A4 sheet of good
and
stuff.
A whole side of facts. I don't know if you can get
about
a whole
seals.
Side of facts. There's nothing about seals. There is lots and lots of Liverpool-related stuff there. So how is that relevant to what we're talking about today when we're talking about Man United?
Well, because I just thought there was a parallel to be drawn there between Man United and Liverpool, in that Manchester United seemed to be starting on a period of decline. Liverpool went through a very similar period of decline in the early 90s, and I just thought it was interesting how those things were starting to happen, just as Liverpool were potentially on the upward curve.
How devastating has that Liverpool decline been since they last won a league title?
Well, if you call 11 trophies devastating, then it was horrific. But by their standards, when they won absolutely everything season in, season out for decades before.
They've not been shy, the Brasso, have they, really?
They've not been shy. They've done all right. They've got some FA Cups in there, 3 FA Cups, 4 League Cups. If you count the Charity Shield, they've got a couple of them. Yeah. Champions League, of course.
It's not as if Stevie G never lifted anything over his head, is it? I think it's easy, though, because we're always looking at epoch-changing events, aren't we? It's always a very, very easy to say, change of times here. And we see that now every other season, don't we? With Man City and Chelsea, we think, this is the end of an era, this is the start of a new one. Are we ever going to see anything like what we had with Ferguson? Is there ever going to be another occasion where you're going to see one side dominating for 20 years?
In England, not for the foreseeable future, I would have thought. There are a lot of very strong teams. With the spending power that Chelsea and Manchester City have brought, that's expanded the competition. Manchester United appear to have gone backwards, although to what extent they actually have, I don't know, because of the rise of Manchester City, I think, has somewhat overshadowed them. And this season, Leicester, and if we assume that Leicester's a kind of one-off, they're still Tottenham Hotspur, which seem to have finally sort of got their act together. And, of course, the perennial qualifiers for the Champions League, Arsenal, whom you'd have to say, although a lot of criticism's gone the way of their coach for not spending money or the right amount of money or spending it on the right players, I think that they're pretty much out of debt now, and that stadium is pretty much paid off. And, I mean, at some point they are going to start flexing their muscles, and all the money that they have is theirs.
Granit Xhaka this week, didn't they?
That is a very shrewd... Well, it's not a shrewd signing because he's a Borussia Mönchengladbach black player, Swiss international, and was playing in the Champions League.
But he's already played 40 internationals.
He's not even remotely shrewd or under the radar. Yeah. It's a very appropriate signing for Arsenal, who need a good central midfielder like Xhaka is. So that is an ambitious signing. So I think that we are looking at, for the foreseeable future anyway, sort of 4, 5, 6 clubs. Mm-hmm. All competing for those Champions League spots, and the really good ones competing for the title. So no, I think we're a way off any one team dominating in the way that Fergie's United did, and Paisley / Shankly's / Fagan's Liverpool did.
That's a good thing, though, I think.
It is a good thing, but what about if you're a Man United fan? Well, is that a good thing? Or do you expect Man United to be dominating, or should Man United fans or any fans of any club be a bit more realistic and say we're living in a broader world now where there's lots of super rich clubs that can have a chance of getting the title, or there are chances that anyone could get hold of the title, like Leicester, if all stars align and everything goes well for them.
Yeah, I think, to answer your first point, if you're a Manchester United fan, you're used to having, what, the last 25 years all to yourself.
Well, punctuated by, you know, Blackburn, yeah. Arsenal.
I think it's good for football, is what I'm trying to say. It's good for the league, and I think it's bad just to have one dominant player just winning everything. You're right, there's been some break in that, with Chelsea kind of started to rise up and broke that up, and I think that was probably the start of breaking up Manchester United with those guys, and then obviously the money coming into Manchester City. And then it's kind of all kind of fragmented this season with a really bonkers Premier League, as we keep calling it.
Yeah.
So from my point of view anyway, and I'm not a Manchester United fan or a Liverpool fan or a fan of anybody in the top two-thirds of the Premier League, to be fair, but I like to see an interesting competition, and I like to see something a bit more nail-biting rather than it all being wrapped up by Christmas. I think that's a bit dull.
Mm. Terry, do you think that Louis van Gaal deserved to be sacked?
I think that is a difficult question to answer, because he's just won an FA Cup and he has had to take over what was quite a difficult situation after Moyes left. There is a very interesting article in The Guardian by Daniel Taylor, who lifts the lid to a certain degree about the problems that some of the players had with Van Gaal. I don't know to what extent he's being briefed, and also it's difficult also to really truly measure the importance or the weight of these gripes that the players had with them. But if you're encountering significant problems with the dressing room, and if you're of a mind to not sack the players, then I guess you're left with no choice. And failure to qualify for the Champions League is probably not acceptable by Manchester United standards.
Not for the second time in 3 years.
Indeed. Yeah. And maybe in the next few years, they might have to lower those standards somewhat, because if we get four, five or six teams competing, genuinely competing for those places, all as good as maybe only a cigarette paper separates them in terms of quality, six into four doesn't go.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to be realistic. You can't just keep sacking coaches just because you can't get into those top four spots. But at this point, you have to say that that's probably not good enough by United standards. I mean, Van Gaal is a difficult guy to feel sorry for. But I mean, at the same time, he seems to have given some kind of purpose to United, even if they weren't terribly interesting to watch. And he has just won them their first trophy since Sir Alex Ferguson left, which I think is a significant achievement.
We have to make a break here, because obviously he did win that trophy on Saturday, and unfortunately you were there to see it, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about something else then.
My view, Van Gaal going, is that he was set the objective of qualifying for the Champions League, so I read, and he failed in that objective. He won the FA Cup, but he seems to be, I read the same piece as well, and it seems that he went from ruling with an iron fist, bollocking players in front of all of the other players, and when he was approached, apparently he said, "That's okay, I'll just send them an email instead." Which kind of loses it a bit. He spent north of £200 million on players and didn't achieve his objectives. And this season, despite finishing fifth, they scored one more goal than Sunderland. And I think that says quite a lot about how they went about it. So from a Manchester United fans, and even from the board's point of view, we've given you the money, we've given you the time, and you didn't achieve. And so in any pursuit of in life, you're judged by your performance, and his performance by their standards wasn't good enough. So I suppose they were within their rights to get rid of him. How they did it is a different matter. He didn't achieve what they wanted him to achieve. And
it is amazing how it's happened, though, because really for the last 3 days on social media, it's been the joke of everyone who tweets anything about football.
That and Alan Pardew's dance, of course.
Yes, that and Alan Pardew's dance. Been wonderful week for memes, basically, hasn't it? it's been like a sort of a very early version of transfer deadline day, isn't it, really?
It's been a GIF creator's wet dream.
Oh, it really, really, really has, yes. Yeah. Oh, I love GIF creators. People who create GIFs. They're just the people who just make life worth living, aren't they?
Not really, no.
No?
No.
No. Mm. Yeah. But there's no podcast equivalent of GIFs, is there really? Can you imagine like just taking a 2 second bit of audio and just making it run on a loop when someone clicked on it? Well, that'd be great.
I don't know. It depends whether or not you've got any Easter eggs lined up for the end of the show.
Oh yeah, I think I am. Don't worry, listeners. You're going to have your own version of an audio GIF right at the end of this.
Audio GIFs, that could be a thing, couldn't it?
Whiffs.
Whiffs.
Ooh.
That needs a bit of finessing. Because I found out about it when we were on our way back.
Yeah,
and, this is on Saturday night. And I was staring into space wondering what happens next. And they went, oh, Van Gaal's been sacked. And it was on the BBC News. And then there was this ripple around the rest of the train, and it was snorts of derision and just a general lack of real... I mean, no one, obviously, at that point was particularly well-disposed towards Manchester United, because it was a train full of Crystal Palace fans on their way home having been beaten by Manchester United in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Cracking goal by Lingard, by the way. Yes. I was right behind it. I watched it going.
So was he.
Yeah, the bastard in front of me, he knew it was going in before it went in. It was one of those ones where he knew where you know it's going in before it is.
Obviously, it was
and so he
to
leapt up in the air just as it was going in to scream, because, anyway, let's not go into that. It's the last time he'll ever do that again, if you take my meaning. I mean, that's obviously a leak. They have not even they would be so daft as to actually make that announcement when, in all likelihood, they've only just come off the pitch because we were out on a pretty fucking shell pitch, I can tell you. You think, well, somebody in this club is an absolute twat because they're leaking this information, and you know, in a moment where you just won the FA Cup. I mean, I know it's the FA Cup. I realise the FA Cup is not very important, but I mean, you've just won your first major trophy since Alex Ferguson left. Your players and your staff and your fans are all celebrating, and you think this is a good idea to leak the news about Van Gaal. If indeed that's how it went down, maybe he or she leaked it beforehand, and the news agencies thought, well, you know what, we'll leave this until after the game and we'll do it then for maybe maximum impact. You had this ludicrous situation where Van Gaal is walking into his... into the press conference, he's carrying the cup with him, and the only thing that the press seem to want to ask him about is whether or not he's going to be in the job in the morning.
Yeah,
I mean, I've never known it in an FA Cup final. I know it's been devalued over the years, but my goodness, to suddenly just like, right, we're moving on with the news agenda right now, we're not even going to bother to congratulate you on winning it.
If someone was minded to spin the story in that way, then that was perfectly delivered. Interesting that the BBC, who normally don't go with stories in any kind of breaking way, and I got it flashed up on my phone as well, and I thought actually it was official. But, you know, that's been delivered to the press at exactly the time when the guy's walking around with his trophy, where it would have been really difficult had you done it maybe the next day, after, you know, with pictures of him walking around with the trophy and all that all over the back pages. But they did it at the time where, quite literally, they took the shine off the moment. But it's still hugely distasteful.
I suppose you saw it on the BBC, but I wonder where it actually did break first.
Exactly, yeah.
Because if you are, say, working for a broadcasting company that doesn't have any rights to the FA Cup, and you want a big football story that's going to divert everything away from those that do, then why not come up with something like this when you've got pictures of Jose Mourinho stepping out of his car and crossing the street and buying a kebab or something?
No, it's a good point. I mean, it did serve to perhaps still... You're quite right, I hadn't considered that it served to sort of detract from the spectacle itself, and that would obviously have a knock-on effect for anybody who, you know, was covering the event, you know, with some degree of enthusiasm, like BBC and BT, who have the rights. You know, maybe Sky thought it was an opportunity to be pixie-ish. Yeah, in any event, the whole thing leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth from the point of view of a United fan, although I'm sure, you know, many United fans are probably quite pleased to see him go and excited about Jose Mourinho, who's... almost certainly coming, and with his own particular brand of football.
Which isn't going to be exciting at all.
I mean, Mourinho's peak for me is the 2010 Champions League final, Inter Milan versus Bayern Munich. Well, actually, it's the game before. It's the semi-final in which they knock out Barcelona. And it's fantastic football. But it is, as an aesthetic, not the most exciting. Mm. We've been talking about this kind of football with from Atletico Madrid in the last few weeks, so I won't go into it too much. For me, this is what Mourinho is best at. And I think that if United are going to be a force, they're likely to play in a not too dissimilar fashion.
Mm.
Spend an awful lot of time without the ball and hit teams on the break, in simplest terms. And that is not really the kind of football that they've come to expect should be played at Old Trafford. So I wonder, you know, they're going to have to win a lot of football matches, I think, to be able to sell it to their fans. And I don't know whether or not it's the kind of champagne brand of football that you would expect from a team with their profile and with their support and with their generous sponsors.
I mean, if they're expecting a team like they used to have in the Ferguson era, when you've got, you know, wingers just flying at the opposition, then they're not going to get that, obviously, with Mourinho. And as well as that, you know, I'm not afraid to admit, I know some Chelsea supporters, and having gone along to... Yeah, I know.
That's
I know.
Lovely.
Yeah, I know. I'm coming out on that. But, you know, they always joke, Chelsea go 1-0 up, and Mourinho puts every man behind the ball, and they just defend the whole thing. Van Gaal, he didn't do anything so austere, you could say, but it was, you know, it wasn't entertaining football, and they're not going to get what they're looking for with him. I think that the post-Ferguson era in years to come will look back at it as it'd be night and day. I don't just mean in terms of trophies, but I think you'll see a succession of managers coming and going over the coming years.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the old argument, isn't it? It's although the fans will chant attack, 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 attack. Win, 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 win is what they should be saying, isn't it, really? And as soon as they win something, or as soon as they win a league title, not an FA Cup, but as soon as they win a league title and they have that with playing, you know, the austere football that is going to come, then they won't mind. I do want to see the profile of Jose Mourinho with the Sir Alex Ferguson stand in the background, because, you know, you're going to get bored to death of that next season, I can tell you that much. Absolutely. When I see it for the first time, that'll be it. I won't need to see it again.
You know when they do, when they unfurl? Is it unfurl managers or is it unveil managers? Unmask managers? Whatever they do with managers. When they bring them out and they have to hold their scarf aloft, looking like complete twats, as you know, and it's obviously usually on the pitch in the stadium. Do you think that Mourinho will allow people to take pictures of him with his back to the Sir Alex Ferguson stand?
Nope.
Or do you think he'll insist that it has to be the one opposite it?
I think even if he does insist on that, someone's going to Photoshop it around the other way anyway.
Yeah.
I think
because that's the sort of thing
probably
that
some
do.
Probably some PR at Old Trafford.
Yes,
it?
Exactly.
I think fast forward a season or two, there'll be a picture on the back of one of the tabloids with Mourinho, his tie all hanging down, his suit all dishevelled, he's looking down with his face in his hands, and you'll see just behind him.
Yeah.
So Alex Ferguson stand.
That is exactly.
And they'll
the
say
image.
Ferguson. They'll say Mourinho. Where did it all go wrong?
Yeah.
And that'll be the image.
Yeah. It'll be him just got with his hand across his nose, sort of flicking his nose somewhat. Yeah. The tie loosened. You know, the old what's the expression?
Of 5 o'clock shadow.
5 o'clock shadow. It's going to be absolutely perfect.
I can just see that back page of the Times.
Yeah. And this is what people are hoping for. This is what they want. This is what they insist. This is why the poisonous voices in their ears said, do you know what you really need to do with that stand? You know what would really look great across the top of there? Sir Alex Ferguson's stand. That looks going to look great. Because anyone else who stands there, great photo.
When United went into decline in the early 1970s, after Sir Matt Busby stepped down and after that 68 team sort of broke up, his successors had to deal with the fact that Sir Matt was always around and that he was unwilling to let go of the club. And it became a very powerful narrative when Alex Ferguson took over. And it was always something. If you guys remember, but in the late 90s, there was very strong talk that Ferguson would actually leave. He was actually set to leave and they were planning his successor. And the problem, if I remember rightly, and I may be misremembering this, I'm afraid, but I'm sure one of the reasons why he ended up staying is because the club, it was run by Martin Edwards at the time, eminently more sensible man, I think. Or was it David Gill? In any event, two relatively sensible people who went, we don't want you around here cramping the style of the new guy. Because, you know, they were still very much informed by their experience when Sir Matt Busby left. As it happens, Alex Ferguson didn't go, and so that problem was deferred.
Mm.
But it seems that the new, when David Gill left and Edward Woodward took over, and when, you know, Alex Ferguson left, and in that sort of period of time leading up to his departure, they amplified that mistake. Mm. Not just by saying, look, you know, you'll always be welcome here, you know, where you can sit in the stands and you can, you know, look down on your successor with your eyes burning into the back of his head, but you can do it in your own stand, named after you. And this, it's just, you know, I mean, we've talked about hubris on this podcast before, and I mean, you know, to an extent it is, but to what extent is genuine hubris? Because ultimately, you know, they still keep winning stuff, don't they?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
As last Saturday demonstrated, so...
But I suppose we come back to what you were saying earlier, though, Jan, and although Liverpool have won a lot since the last time they won a league title, are Man United really on this same roller coaster now? Is this first FA Cup they won on Saturday just a list of trophies that really are for the more, I don't know, let's say, rabid fans?
Yeah.
Not enough. Or is it just going to be the fact that, oh yeah, you won the FA Cup, but you didn't get Champions League? What do they want? What do you think they would have wanted more? Do you think they would have wanted Champions League spot more than the FA Cup?
I think if he got the Champions League spot and won the FA Cup, he still would have been sacked.
That's entirely what's wrong with football, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
I think he would have achieved everything that he wanted him to achieve. He would hit all the targets that they'd set for him.
Right.
He was still gone as soon as Mourinho was available. Well, not as soon as he was available, but when it became obvious they were speaking to him.
A decent amount of time.
Yeah, I think so.
To appear,
and I think they'll be I think as Chelsea have been over the years, they'll be, I've no doubt they'll be, you know, fairly successful, but they'll do it under, I think, a succession of managers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the modern way now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Managers now, you know, they expect to be, if they're doing well, they'll get the 3 years that they sign up for.
Yeah.
And that's a model that Guardiola certainly works with. Pep will stay at City for 3 years.
Yeah.
And probably not a month longer than that.
And leave on his terms.
And he'll leave on his terms.
If he can,
that's assuming, of course,
yeah,
exactly. But, I mean, and he'll be expected to win the title, and I would imagine he'll be expected to continue to go deep in the Champions League. He might not be expected to win it, because Champions League's a knockout tournament when you get to the final 16, and they're not always easy to win. But he'll certainly be expected to be competitive in the Champions League, as he has been with Bayern, even though he never won it with Bayern.
Yeah.
He was competitive, so.
Well, he's won 6 titles in 7 seasons as a manager.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to win next season?
Well, I think that he's going into a different situation at England, because there's other competitors.
Yeah.
I think that he got something of a pass last season at Bayern. When I say last season, I don't mean the one we've just had, I mean the one before.
Yeah, yeah.
In which the likely contender was Borussia Dortmund, who suddenly dramatically fell away and left the field clear, and nobody else stepped up. Prior to that, he had inherited the triple winning side, which was very, very good, and he won the double, and he won, and then he's won 2 leagues very, very comfortably. This last one is not quite so comfortably as it looks, actually. He's going into a different landscape with, again, you know, perhaps 2 or 3 different teams, possibly 4 different teams, who will compete for the title. One of them will be Manchester City. So he's got that to contend with, which he wouldn't have had. And he wouldn't have had that in Spain as well.
Mm.
But the likelihood is he would have had, well, if memory serves, Real Madrid as the big challengers, and possibly Atletico. So this is going to be a different thing for him. And the pressure will be on him to succeed in Europe, because I think there's a tremendous appetite for Manchester City to win the Champions League. And he's going to have to manage that.
Yeah.
So it could be... You know, it's not. I think it's his biggest challenge as a manager, so far.
Okay. Well, so before we round up here, though, but we got a whole summer coming ahead, and we're going to probably leave club football behind for the podcast.
That would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful, yes. But you've got to look at Man City. Are going to have it. Well, they've got a new manager for this summer. United have got a new manager for this summer. Chelsea have got a new manager for this summer. They're all looking at catching up with Leicester because they're the title winners. Is this going to be a ridiculous summer of signings? An absolutely stupid summer of signings?
I would say yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, three clubs with very deep pockets.
Yeah.
They're going to invest heavily, I think.
Mm. Yeah, no question. I mean, City have already started spending. Ilkay Gundogan is almost certainly going to City, which is a great signing for them. He's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be more. And Liverpool. I know you didn't mention Liverpool, but I mean, Liverpool. Yeah. If you were to include them in that,
they've got relatively new manager there, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, two finals. I know it's like, oh, he's lost two finals, but he's got this really
he's
rubbish
lost five
team.
Finals.
He's lost five finals. And God, that's such an awful narrative.
But, yes.
I mean, he's like, he got to five finals. Good
yes.
for him.
Good
he
for him.
He lost five finals. Yes. Bad for him. Yes. Shut up, you idiot. He's taken a really, really ordinary team and got them to two finals, one of which was a European final.
Mm-hmm.
They've already signed Joel Matip from Schalke, who is a superior central defender, and that will be apparent to anyone
that's
with
good.
Eyes.
That's certainly something that will come in very handy at Liverpool.
Loris Karius is from Mainz. He wasn't under anything like the microscope at Mainz than he was at Liverpool, so there will be pressure with that gig, and he's been given the number one jersey, so one assumes he is replacing Mignolet, at least certainly in the Premier League. But I mean, he is by common consent one of the finer goalkeepers of what is generally a very fine bunch of Bundesliga goalkeepers. So, and they've already started. The season has barely finished, and they've already started. So the arms race is well underway.
Mm. I might call more references.
I know. Something told me that you would.
I think we should probably play out with some David Hasselhoff, shouldn't we, then?
That's a brilliant idea. Hasselhoff will know what to do.
Yes. And on that 80s referential note, I think it's probably time we brought this podcast to a close. So for me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.
Mind you, I did my usual research, which I
good
here.
Good man.
Looked at the number of trophies, and bear in mind, I'm looking through the
brochure. You've got a big piece of paper.
I did.
Like Doug Leach, you've written him in big.
Well, I know,
big
but then letters. I realised, oh shit, it's a massive marker. I'm going to need an A3.
what's this enormous cock you've drawn here?
But the start.
There's only three hairs growing out of the balls, though. I mean,
and there's no spunk. Where's the spunk?